back. I'm Juliette Talebi, you're watching Stockwatch, and joining me in studio this evening are David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities and Wayne McCurry from F&B Wealth and Investments. If you'd like to send us questions, please do SMS us, stock in the question, to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. David, Wayne, good evening. We're talking about gas before we went on air, yes, which may be appropriate. It's just a lot of hot air in the studio sometimes.
Yeah.
But hopefully not tonight. There'll be lots of questions, lots of interesting things to talk about in the market today. When the US markets are particularly strong, are they sort of carrying us along with them? Because there were some quite interesting falls on the JSE today, but overall we ended in the green.
Yes, a little bit in the green. Look, the US market has been rallying the last 2 months on the back of the Federal Reserve's U-turn. You know, last year it was just interest rates are going up, up, up. And all of a sudden, literally, virtually overnight, they decided, ooh, hang on a second, interest rates are staying flat. And that gave a massive spurt to the market because the market was under severe pressure in November, December last year, and it's reversed that. It hasn't got back to the previous highs yet, but it's reversed a lot of that, and it's all on that.
Mm. Which, I mean, I have to say, I just thought this was an insane move. It's the market wagging the dog of the Federal Reserve, it struck me.
Well, it's also President putting out tweets as well, yeah, and making a huge fuss, you know. So,
But the other thing is, you know, is the U.S. economy really so shaky that you can't raise interest rates? And is the stock market so fragile that an interest rate hike would be enough to kill it?
No. Look, the Federal Reserve changed its policy because inflation did not rear its head, and it has not. Mm. I can promise you if inflation was 3% instead of 2%, rates would be going up no matter what the stock market did, no matter what President Trump tweeted about. So I think they came to the realization that, hang on, inflation's not going up despite the incredibly tight labor market. Inflation's not going up. Mm. So it is a little above the 10-year average, but they've even changed their stance on that. Previously, their stance was 2%. Mm. Now they've said 2% on average through the cycle, which makes sense because sometimes inflation's 1%. So then why kill it when it gets to 2? Because your average inflation will be 1.5.
Yeah.
So maybe kill it when it gets to 2.5. You know, and our Reserve Bank's done a very similar thing, by the way, and I don't think many people have noticed it. They never talk anymore about 3 to 6 being the range. Because if it is, then 5.9 is acceptable. They say their target is 4.5 now. Mm. They're stating this clearly.
David, if we come back to...
I'm just saying PPI today in America was, again, another benign number. And that's also given a boost to the market as well. So I'm a follower of Paul Krugman, you know, and a long time ago he was criticizing the Fed for having raised rates, you know, believing that there wasn't that momentum in the market and they were going too far ahead, which has proved to be the right track. And so we've got to get through, you know... I'm not Franz, what's his name? I'm not a chartist in that. But for me, this is a critical level for the S&P.
2,800 on the S&P
2,815 or thereabouts. So we've got to get through that. I'd like to see another run just to give me the confidence that that we're going to stay here. Because I don't want to go all the way back again. It's so depressing. You know, markets that fall are just, just kills me. Yeah.
Oh, no, well, SA Inc. must be really having you out of the razor blade.
I just sit there being a real grump the whole day, and I just walk up and down, have a cup of coffee, swear at everybody, and shout at everyone.
Kick the dog.
We haven't,
Don't get one, please. Not child welfare. SPCA might come knocking. Some of the retailers didn't have a great day, but a lot of them went ex-dividend.
Yes.
Was that really what accounted for some of the pullbacks?
Yeah, and the business confidence number did not help.
You've got to separate. It's a very difficult market to really analyze because there are different moving parts. The resource market is not governed by what happens here. It's what happens to platinum, palladium, iron ore price, etc., which has been very, very firm. And you've got a weaker rand. So that's one cylinder that's doing pretty well. Then you've got our offshore companies. Remember, Europe's doing pretty well, and so your British American Tobacco, AB InBev, those shares that are not doing, you know, that let us down last year, have actually been holding. Richemont, Naspers, all of that. So that's the other cylinder. Then we get to the third cylinder, which is South Africa Inc. That's just fallen away.
Out.
Yeah, that's really bombed out on us. And even the banks and insurers have not held up. So that side of it, which includes the retailers, has actually let us down.
So there's a great question from McDonald, who watches the show regularly, and he says, despite the South African economic challenges, can South African quality blue chip companies stand the test of time?
Define a blue chip South African
quality. Okay, we'll get to that. But is it time to apply what Warren Buffett said, that you buy when others are fearful?
The answer is yes. Mm. But the theory of buying when others are fearful is based on one premise, that the economy, company's earnings, company outlook will return to a higher level. So in other words, we're in the trough now and there will be a rebound. If you believe that, then the answer clearly is yes. You never know when. You can take platinum shares. For a long time, you spoke here that the numbers don't add up. Something's got to give. Either the companies will go bankrupt and stop mining palladium and platinum, or the price is going to go through the roof. Price went through the roof. You would have thought that Impala would be up 300% in less than 6 months. So you never know when it's going to happen. But if you believe that the future is more bright than the past, it doesn't have to be great, it must just be better than the past, then some of these retailers and the banks look cheap.
But David, I mean, we were talking off air. Are South African blue chip companies blue chip still? Have they not made some terrible decisions?
Yeah. A lot of them have let us down. Which does suggest
that management teams, you know, shouldn't be taking the salaries that they are.
A lot have let us down, you know. Or put it this way, they haven't fulfilled their promise. They haven't come close to promising, you know, what they did when they did these acquisitions.
And they let us down on the exact David's last word there. The mistake made was to run outside of South Africa. And you can name how many catastrophes that's caused.
But maybe it's not necessarily just the point of running outside South Africa. It's the kind of deals that you do. And I was talking to a sort of a small cap analyst a little bit earlier today who said, it's very easy for the big companies to make terrible decisions because they're professional managers. Mm. They might have a very little stake in the business. Yeah. You know, they've got these independent boards. They get advisors. They pay the advisors to tell them what they want to hear. Then they do what the advisors tell them.
Yeah. And then they blame the advisors
when it goes wrong. Whereas smaller companies who have skin in the game, who think, okay, let's do a little acquisition here, who are more entrepreneurial, can go offshore and get it right.
Yes. Mm.
So it's not necessarily the act of going offshore.
You must remember the running offshore is driven by macroeconomic factors. People run offshore when the rand collapses because we've got to get non-rand earnings. You're under intense pressure by your domestic stakeholders and shareholders, whatever you want to call them, to get non-rand earnings. So they see you coming from a mile off. Yeah. You're desperate to buy.
You are the country bumpkin fumbling around in international markets.
At almost any price, they see you coming from a mile. And you buy these things that you can turn around in a country you know nothing about. It's astonishing, quite frankly.
Yeah. A couple have done well. Spar have done pretty well.
Not many have done well.
But not a lot. Yeah. And I think we give them too much slack. We don't put pressure on. I haven't seen any manager resign. I've seen no one fall on their sword for strategies that have gone awfully wrong. No one said, sorry, I think you need to have somebody else come in and drive this. Yeah. I'm not the right person. I apologize. Not at all.
Maybe shareholders should push for that. They should say, look.
Hell. look. Hello, Woolworths. Mm. Mediclinic, I suppose.
Mediclinic's right. Yeah. It's the same thing. This was a Rembrandt company. Rembrandt never did anything wrong. They were the blue of the blue chips. Whatever they did always turned into gold, or maybe palladium's the right word, because palladium's a 1,500, gold's only, 1,300. Yeah. So you look at their track record was incredible for the companies they delivered. So you didn't believe when you said, no, Rembrandt will not let us down. Well, they did.
Look, no company stays blue chip forever or all the time. Every company goes through a tough stage.
And maybe we can talk about some of the results, but because there were a couple of companies that made me think, okay, maybe they've taken the medicine and they're doing the right things, like Sun International and Impact. I didn't think I would be saying this, but there's a question on Aspen and Tongaat. So Aspen you know, the one question is, I thought it was done from falling at 140 Rand on Friday, but it surprised me. And then Aspen and Tongaat, are these two shares buying opportunities? So Aspen is, we can include
we
in...
We don't know what's happened with Tongaat.
Tongaat, we don't know.
Yeah. So we don't know what the accounting issues are. Yeah. So be careful. And that's why people are abandoning it. You know, I think it's got a market cap of about 2.3, 2.4 billion. And it's got all those rolling hills in KwaZulu-Natal.
But that's where the problem might be. Where can the problem be in Tongaat? It's either in the valuation of the land or it's in the valuation of the agricultural crop. Because there's nothing else. They don't carry debtors. They haven't got intangible assets. They've done no big acquisitions. So it can only be in the balance sheet value of those two assets.
And this is KZN. KZN's only got Grindrod and Tongaat, but that's it. You know, this is half of it going. What else do they do down there? I'm not sure.
Admittedly, the world sugar price has collapsed as well. You know, so the big fall in the share price over the last 2 or 3 years is the fall in the world sugar price. But surprisingly enough, that looks as though it could be turning upwards because it is a cyclical commodity.
Yeah. Okay. So Tongaat, don't go near until you know what PwC is going to announce. What about Aspen? So Aspen, you know, today I think
it was about 108, 109. They came down a bit, yeah.
So they were down another 4% today.
Yeah, but at least
recover from what did they get to? 70 Rand.
70 bucks, yeah.
I mean, I don't like to hang around. And I have great respect for Stephen. For Stephen's art, for Gus Attridge, and what they're trying to achieve. But what scared me is when you see that first slope there in October, when the results came out, you could see signs that they weren't delivering, that this was taking longer than they'd anticipated. And then they decided, well, listen, debt was killing them. They had to sell the infant milk story. And the second,
what
was worrying about this result.
What do you sell when you're forced to sell?
Your best assets.
The ones that people want to buy.
Yeah. And just on this as well, when I looked at the numbers again, it wasn't the debt that scared me, which I think they can overcome, was really that the revenue that they're producing, that it's the whole issue is taking a lot longer to come through than we anticipated. And that just frightened me a little.
Okay, so you're out.
Me, I'm gone. I'll hang around, I'll watch, you know, but in the meantime, I can't take the risk. Because it's not my money, it's other people's money. I can't take the risk that there's going to be another leg down or something else is going to go wrong.
Yeah. Wayne, we've got to
wait on Aspen. We've got to see how the debt comes down. I wouldn't buy it this level.
Yeah. Okay. We'll leave it there for the moment. If you'd like to send questions after the break, please do SMS us, stock in the question to 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Welcome back. Let's have a look at what's happening to those U.S. markets. Ah, there we go. 2,800 is the level, the key level for the S&P 500. David said, 2,815, and we are now 1 point above that. Giddy up. The Nasdaq up almost 1% today, and the Dow Jones trading 0.75% to the good. So I think it's the third day of straight gains.
It's got to hold it.
Hoorah.
It mustn't. We don't want to sell off in the late stages. So we've got to close at those kind of levels. I'd like to see it break a little bit above there, just for comfort.
And there you can see the European markets also hanging onto the US coattails. We also closed in the green. Still in studio with me are David Shapiro from Sassman and Wayne McCurry from F&B Wealth and Investments. So it's
looking good.
Looking good.
Mm. Yeah. For whatever reason. You know, the whole everybody's talking about Boeing, and Boeing is a big component of the Dow. And there's a lot of discussion about, you know, about the business. I can't really comment on it. These things tend to pass, but still, you know, the safety at stake.
Well, it's quite critical when you have this new plane developed, the anti-stall software, which clearly may need some tweaks, and you've got airline companies worldwide dumping this airplane. But
I don't mind it because I flew down to Cape Town last Wednesday.
I also flew in the Matrix.
I flew in the older one. This was one that was probably the first 737 that they owned.
1962,
and when you know, you go into the toilet and you press and the blue water still comes down, then you know it's very, very old.
And there's still an ashtray on your seat.
So
I felt less safe in that than the MAX 8, than the MAX.
Don't. Honestly, those airlines get those engines are tuned every I don't know how many hours. But maybe just a comment there is the fact is that the S&P 500 is so much more new technology companies that maybe 10 or 15 years ago, what's happening to Boeing would be slightly more catastrophic.
It, Boeing's not in the S&P, you're fine, but it is still a Dow component. Yeah.
Okay.
And Dow is an average, which is
it's a straight
average. It's the most peculiar
index you've ever seen. It was designed in the days before calculators. You just added up all the shares and you divided by 30, is it?
So the higher the price, the bigger the weighting kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, moving on. I mentioned that there were a couple of companies that, you know, came out with fairly decent updates and results today. The one was Impact, the other one was Sun International. So, and you saw both companies' share prices having a slightly better day. I think both were up about 3%. Sun International, they are bringing down the debt. They're going to report positive growth in headline earnings. Should we cut them some slack? And
yeah, I'm not saying them into the gambling industry. They're now gaining share in Menlyn. They were quite upbeat about that. But, yeah, I don't know.
Just be careful there. One's got to look at all the games. Because they mentioned Sun City as was disappointing. And I think what really drove them up or what's given them a boost is South America. Maybe things improving there, but I think it's too early to call an end, you know, to believe that spending is going to take place, particularly in gaming. And they've got a lot. They've got a lot of room to make up in Times Square in Midland.
Yeah, and also they've still got a lot of debt. So even though it is down, it's still nine-odd billion rand.
I shouldn't say that because every time we say that, management get
they
us
get
there
very
and
cross
say,
with us.
You've got to go and see how the operation. I said, no, I don't feel like going to Pretoria.
Well, I was actually at Sun City a couple of weeks ago and I was pleasantly surprised, I have to say. And very quickly on Impact.
You look coming off a low base here, but a tough time.
I mean, Impact for a long time was a darling, then went through a terrible, terrible patch.
Yeah. Yeah. They lost contract. Also, the plastic side is...
Plastic side's a problem.
Mm.
But also it's, something it's, worth maybe
it's
nibbling
not,
at.
They're mainly paper and board and that, but, you know, one division can take you down.
Mm.
But that chart, if you go further back, I think they've basically halved in the last 2 or 3 years. Yeah,
yeah. Okay. There are questions on the platinum shares. So the one is the rally over? And the other is, would you hang on to Impala and Lonmin? And how can I get exposure to the booming EV market? I was thinking batteries, so nickel and cobalt miners. EV, what does that stand for?
Electric vehicles.
Okay, electric vehicles, sorry. Firstly, platinum. Is the rally over? Do you cash in now? If you've managed to ride this properly?
To be honest, yes.
That's interesting. What's
but you know the thing is, it's palladium. It's not platinum. So it's.
If you go back, you must go look at the palladium price, because the last time this happened was I think in 2001, thereabouts, when palladium started to, you know, was above platinum, and that's when everybody started to convert back to platinum from palladium.
Yes, and
you're likely to see that happen again. You know, because the price has gone, the gap has widened so far.
I mean,
it's
double.
Yeah.
It'll start to pay to go back to platinum away from palladium. So you'll probably start to see it, you know, equalize.
Look, if you've got two or three, if you were lucky enough to own the shares, and there were not many who owned them, if you were lucky enough to have owned the shares, you have doubled your money.
Yeah. In fact, I was astonished to see how well Anglo American Platinum has done
over
a long time. They actually,
they took the pain 3-4 years ago.
But they've restructured.
Yeah.
Don't take anything away from Kutafani and
Chris Griffiths.
Griffiths, you know, they actually they rejigged
it. And Cynthia Carroll, she appointed Chris Griffiths to head up Anglo Platinum.
It wasn't Cynthia Carroll's fault. When she was there, you had to acquire or die in those days.
Okay, so maybe cash in your chips now if you've done nicely out of the rally. Commodities, how predictable? The question on electric vehicles. Would you buy commodities like nickel, cobalt? Cobalt was a very sexy commodity
last year.
You must
remember, EVs obviously are here and are obviously going to stay here. But understand, it's a long time until they are the dominant force in the market. Eh? So if you buy something related to EVs today, you will more than likely make a fortune on it. But it might take you 15 years to make a fortune. So it's these trend things always sound good, and they are good, but it takes a lot longer to happen than what you or anyone else thinks. You know, there's 100 million cars sold a year worldwide. It's only 350,000 EVs sold worldwide. It's minuscule. It's growing quickly, but it's got to grow quickly for a very long time until it truly becomes a factor.
And would you buy, you know, if you wanted to buy, a mining company that is exposed to mining pieces falling out, all it's all going haywire, would you rather buy a diversified miner than a sort of a single commodity miner?
I would always rather buy a diversified miner.
You know, you must look at the lithium markets and the cobalt markets. I don't think they're that stable. I don't think that's been one-way traffic.
And also, if there's one area in this whole fourth industrial revolution that is actually lagging everything else by country mile, it's battery technology. So there could be some breakthrough in the next 3 years that renders every current battery completely and utterly obsolete. You know, maybe it's made from seaweed.
It puts us out the game.
Yeah.
I mean, the electricity just puts us out completely in that area. Yeah, you can get the hybrids.
I mean, electricity is sort of a nice to have in South Africa at this point in time.
You've got to fill that up every night. I mean,
at some point, we might be doing stopwatch buys by candlelight.
Just to put a little bit of a positive spin, I went to a lunch today, big mining company, massive user of electricity, massive user, one of the largest in the country. And they interact with Eskom all the time. So I asked a very direct question. I said, is it possible in the foreseeable future that Eskom can fix what they've got? And the answer was quite interesting. They said the new power stations, they reckon, could stabilize their output at a higher level in 6 months. The old ones that were neglected, not only because Eskom didn't have money, but they were intentionally neglected because the new ones were coming on stream and were going to put them out of business. They were going to close them down. Now, they can't close them down, I reckon, a year. And that's putting aside money. Is there enough cash financing? Just pure technical. It looks as though there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Let's hope so. Another question on commodities. How predictable is the commodity cycle?
Yeah.
And how do I know when to buy and sell commodity stocks? And where are we in the cycle at the moment?
I don't think you can call that. I think the most difficult, the most difficult thing is, and I heard experts today on the oil price saying no one can forecast where oil is going to go. And I think that applies to commodities. So understand, not only when you go into commodities, you've also got to call currencies. Because it's not a one-dimensional play. So the interaction between those two is also very difficult. So it just adds another dimension to trying to call commodity shares and that. I think Wayne's always said, you know, at the bottom of the cycle, it's a time to buy.
Yeah.
But how do you know when you're at the bottom of the cycle?
You know, because that's when you don't want them.
Okay. Was it two or three years ago when we thought Anglo was, or Glencore was going to go out of business?
Anglo was $50, Kumba was $22 bucks or $20. Okay. With one caveat, it's actually relatively easy to call the commodity cycle because it goes up and it goes down. But you can call it 2 or 3 years incorrectly. Mm. You can be too early or too late. But the cycle, you can look at the commodity indices. They actually operate in a relatively predictable type of cycle.
Yeah.
Now, the top of the cycle was 2008. The bottom of the cycle was 2015, and I actually think we near the top of the cycle now, to be totally honest.
There's two elements that are very important to think about as well. Forget about oil. We had the Vale issue with the tailings dam or the burst of the dam. So iron ore has gone to levels that no one forecast because of tightness. So that's an incident. And the other was the Volkswagen issue, which took people away from platinum into petrol cars, you know. So you got platinum under pressure, palladium going up as people switch those.
But
so,
if you look at commodity share prices, they've done their thing. Don't get bullish on commodity share prices now.
Okay. Very quickly, you don't have much time for your stock picks, and you both actually have them this evening. Waffled. Growth point for you, Wayne?
Look, very simply, yield approaching 9%. When last did you see that?
I don't know. Can you tell us?
I was David Shapiro and I were young men.
Okay, so growth point for you and David?
I've got NVIDIA, which is the chip maker as well, which has been under a lot of pressure because of issues with cryptocurrencies and so on, and has fallen. But now they've just done this Mellanox deal. That sounds like a tummy
I thought it was sort of anti-malarial.
Which is an Israeli company, very, very good. And I think it's starting to turn around. I think that, I know people say it's expensive, but I like NVIDIA.
Okay.
Can't say more, hey?
No.
Okay.
Alas. David Wayne, thanks very much, as always, for joining us on the show. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities. Wayne McCurry is from FNB Wealth and Investments. And we'll be back with more of your questions tomorrow evening at 7:30. Have a great evening. Very quickly, you don't have much time for your stock picks, and you both actually have them this evening. Waffled. Growth point for you, Wayne?
Look, very simply, yield approaching 9%. When last did you see that?
I don't know. Can you tell us?
I was David Shapiro and I were young men.
Okay, so growth point for you and David?
I've got NVIDIA, which is the chip maker as well, which has been under a lot of pressure because of issues with cryptocurrencies and so on, and has fallen. But now they've just done this Mellanox deal. That sounds like a tummy.
I thought it was sort of anti-malarial.
Which is an Israeli company, very, very good. And I think it's starting to turn around. I think that I know people say it's expensive, but I like NVIDIA.
Okay.
Can't say more, hey?
No.
Okay.
Alas. David Wayne, thanks very much, as always, for joining us on the show. David Shapiro is from Sasfin Securities. Wayne McCurry is from FNB Wealth and Investments. And we'll be back with more of your questions tomorrow evening at 7:30. Have a great evening.